Had he been stopped by, you know, a patrol officer with 2, 3 years, maybe 4 or 5 years of experience, he probably would have beat him, you know, but learning to ask the right questions, when to ask those right questions, and learning to observe the cues and the behaviors associated with, you know, the deceptive behavior. That's the key.
Hey guys, check out the 2023 Street Cop Conference, April 23rd through the 28th, Gaylord Convention Center. It's going to be the event of the year. Keynote speakers include Rob O'Neill, the guy who killed Bin Laden, Kyle Carpenter, the youngest living Medal of Honor recipient, Navy SEAL Jason Redmond, Fox News host Tommy Lahren, Marine Corps Special Forces and Leadership Coach Cody Alford, Sheriff Wayne Ivey, Sheriff David Clark, and Sheriff Mark Lamb. It's going to be one hell of an event. And on top of that, we have all of our instructors and additional instructors from other companies going to be at the event, giving you everything they know for you to have a successful career and get the results you want to get in the field as a police officer. On top of attending the event, you'll get face-to-face time with every instructor attending the event, and all the keynote speakers will spend time with you. We got special events all week, giveaways, nightlife. It's going to be really, really worth your time, energy, and effort. I promise you, you will not regret it for a second. To register for the conference, check out streetcop.com, click conference, and everything you need will be there on the homepage. If you are looking for a room, just click book a room. The block has been sold out at the Gaylord Opryland Convention Center, but there are many hotels nearby within a walking distance of the event. You don't want to miss out on this opportunity. We will see you there.
111, 110. You trying to be a street cop?
Hey guys, welcome to this episode of the Street Cop Training Podcast. I'm your host, founder and CEO of Street Cop Training. My name is Dennis Bonino. And today we have a person that I've been trying to get on this podcast forever. He is a savage. Some of his displays of work are in my program. He's been a friend of mine for years. He's a great human being and one hell of a cop. He crushes it and nationally is known throughout this country for his profound ability to go on the highways and take down significant contraband on cold stops pretty much most of the time. I'd like to introduce you to my friend, Nick Jackson. Did you think when you started you'd be doing what you're doing?
You know, honestly, no. I did not think I would even be anywhere close to interdiction. I was a huge ticket writer when I first started law enforcement, and had a narcotic sergeant where I was working down in Georgia got with me, and he was like, hey, you're out there, you're writing a lot of tickets, you're making some decent arrests. Like, let me steer you in the right direction. And since that moment, interdiction is all I ever cared about.
What was your upbringing? Well, tell me about your childhood. Tell me about your career.
So I grew up in the inner city of Washington, D.C. Grew up
majority.
Yeah, yep. I grew up in D.C.
Where? What part?
So I grew up Texas Avenue, Southeast area. My dad,
I used to
yeah.
I in 04, that's where I started my career. Well, I went on the road there as a U.S. Park Police.
Okay. Heck yeah, man. Yep. So I went from there. My dad moved out to Prince George County in Forestville area, Suitland, Maryland. So I lived there for a few years. Left that area. Kind of went back and forth. My parents were divorced, so I went back and forth. My mom lived in the Norcross, Lawrenceville area of Gwinnett County. Georgia, just outside of Fulton County, Atlanta area. So I would basically hop. I would go back and forth between D.C., Georgia every couple of years. But most of my time was spent in the D.C. area.
Let's go back to your career, man. So you grew up in D.C. You moved back and forth between Gwinnett and Gwinnett's on First 48 too, right? Aren't they on the First 48 a lot?
Yep. Gwinnett County, yep. They are definitely on First 48. Great group of law enforcement guys there. Have some buddies in that that area there.
Yeah, they seem like a pretty squared away crew.
Yeah, Gwinnett County is pretty squared away, man. I mean, they're as far as education wise, it's like in the state of Georgia. Like, I think they rank really high in education. Great area. Even the area where I grew up in originally, Lawrenceville and Norcross area. I mean, it was rough coming back up in the day, but those departments have even changed. Lawrenceville has even gotten a really good department. Norcross has got a really good department. But yeah, Gwinnett County, they're squared away. Technology, law enforcement, there's some good group of guys over there.
All right. So where do you go from here?
So I got out of Gwinnett County, went into law enforcement, I went into the military 2005, 2006. Got selected for airborne school, went into airborne school. That was my thing. I wanted to jump out of planes. Got stationed over in Vicenza, Italy, 173rd Airborne Unit. Was there for a good portion of my career. I got out, and then I probably stayed out for about 6-7 months, and I realized, hey, look, I wanted to do something different. Like I couldn't stay overseas. I actually lived overseas after I got out, after I ETS, and I decided to come back stateside, get into law enforcement. I got picked up with an agency down in Albany, Georgia, Southwest Georgia area. Really, I'll say country, coming from the city. It was a country area, really rough out there for the city and the location. Started there for a little bit, and then decided I wanted to kind of move back home, you know, being from the DMV area, DC, Maryland, Virginia. Went back up to Virginia, got picked up with an agency in the Prince William County area, Virginia, just outside of DC. Worked there for a good little bit, and then I actually went from one agency to another over to Fairfax County and another local agency in the Fairfax County area before I got picked up with my current agency. So kind of did a little hopping initially. And what I was really seeking was a department that could take on my needs. And my needs was interdiction. Like I really wanted to get an interdiction. I was a hornet nest for traffic stop. I was always getting into stuff, arrest, you know, DUIs. And I was just trying to evolve what I was finding to get to that high level element to what I now know. So after I left Virginia, came out to my current agency, started in Arizona, and I work for a federal agency. So my federal agency, we kind of cover majority of the Southwest border area and then majority of the Northwest area. And then everything else is pretty scattered from there across the country as far as jurisdictional wise.
And a uniformed agency as well. You're not an agent, you're a uniformed guy.
Yeah. So every agency I've been with, I've always been uniform. My current agency, I'm a federal I work for a federal entity, and I'm a uniform position, but I'm assigned to drug investigations. So I work under investigations unit as a canine officer. I've been canine for just about 5 years now. Running a canine, and I'm assigned to another federal agency. Where I work full-time interdiction here in New Mexico.
Just running cold stops. That's all you're doing, right?
100%. I'll say about 95% of what we do here in New Mexico on our interdiction task force is cold stop. It is us sitting on the interstate, majority I-40, I-25, some other U.S. highways, U.S. 60, 550, 491, 191 in New Mexico. And 95%, if not more, what we do is cold stops. We don't get that many wall stops as some of the other agencies do. We get them here and there, but last year I can probably think of five that I personally had to deal with as far as a wall stop. So a good percentage of what I do is a cold stop, 100%.
You tell people what a wall stop is.
So a wall stop is basically you get that phone call, DEA, HSI, whatever three-letter agency you could think of, or another local agency. Hey man, we got this car coming through. We know you got the plate readers. It just hit your state. Can you, check out this car? We got information. It's supposed to be loaded with, 10 pounds of whatever. A lot of times, in my personal experience, it's, hey, we got this car. It's supposed to have 60 pounds of meth in it. And my personal reason of why I do not like wall stops is because we'll get a lead of some sort like that, and then when we actually get the vehicle stop, it's like 5 or 10 pounds. It's never accurate information. In my experience, I've had a handful that have actually been accurate. But for the most part, in my personal experience with wall stops, they just don't really pan out to what they say they're supposed to have. But I can probably think of three that have actually been the weight or the currency amount that they were supposed to be. So that's a wall stop. Cold stop is going to be me just sitting out there in the interstate, monitoring vehicle traffic, driving behavior, and looking for those inconsistencies and going out and making those motor vehicle stops based on driving behavior.
So a wall stop is essentially the same thing as a whisper stop. That's what we call it up here. They call them whisper stops, right? You've heard that before.
Yes. So a wall stop is basically considered a whisper stop in another terminology. And we basically get those informations or those phone calls occasionally. And when those phone calls come in, we go out and we try to interdict them for those additional agencies that are requesting those assistances.
Dude, one conversation we had a while back, you and I think it was over the phone, because I've known you for quite a few years now. been trying to see you in person. It's a real blessing that I'm going to get to see in about 72 days from today in Nashville, Tennessee. But I remember asking you, when did it dawn on you that you were getting small and medium loads? And what did you change to start getting to bigger loads? And when I say loads, folks, it means seizing contraband on the highways. This is one of those things I give to people all the time because it's just these small little adjustments we can make to find the results that you're looking for. People in class will be there and know how to stop cars. They know how to ask for consent. They know what indicators are. They know how to call for a canine. They know the process of searching a car, but they can't get away from the same results every single time. And I tell them, if I watched your MVRs and all the footage from your last 100 stops, I've got a funny feeling you're stopping the same exact fucking car and the same exact people every single time. So maybe you could add to that.
Yeah. So what got me to understand the low level versus mid level, kind of what I believe that you're kind of hitting on, I was finding cars. I was finding, you know, ounces. I was finding grams. I was finding, you know, guns and felony stops. And what got me to focus more on high level tradecraft is basically working with and taking some classes. And some of those classes that I have taken that I have to basically say is one of Sean Pardes's classes, who I now teach for, teaching these smugglers 2.0. This class basically taught me to focus more on the interview and more on the documentation and more on the tiers of the levels of people that we were going to be encountering when it related to smuggling. So when I cut out a lot of the low-level individuals or people that I was encountering, that could be, you know, street-level dealers, users, people who were just, you know, committing crimes within our area or even passing through. Taking that and then focusing more on the higher level echelon of criminal activity really put me to the cue of focusing on higher level echelon and learning the ins and outs of how the cartels operate, how they take cars and they basically give the car to an individual, have them registered under their name, just one aspect, and taking that to another level of, you know, putting out, I would say putting out more of a the tradecraft and the echelon of showing that this vehicle is registered to an individual and then making that into more of a higher level echelon. Whereas we're locally seeing, oh, you're in a third party car. You know, this vehicle has to be up to something versus taking that vehicle, registering it in their name, running from point A to point B and it looking more like their vehicle in essence of a higher level form of tradecraft that they typically would use at a higher level tier.
I don't think people maybe have context of how much of a badass motherfucker you really are. Nick is one of the most savage dudes in the country on the road. And anytime he sends me shit that he hits, it's like absurd. It's never anything like, dude. And I don't want to discourage people from showing the results from the training they've received. I don't teach high level interdiction. I essentially believe that I teach a complete perspective change and very foundational pieces. But I also think that interdiction guys who come to my training are like, you actually blew my fucking mind today. I'm like, well, yeah, because I'm trying to bridge gaps for you guys. Everybody's in the interdiction world goes so gung ho on the big load. There's just so much more that goes with it that you got to think about. So I want to change perspective on people to, you know, and I say that in class, I always give that disclaimer, guys, you're not going to see pictures of me in this program with a German Shepherd or Belgian Malinois on a table, a street sign behind it, and 50 fucking kilos of cocaine. That's not who I was. That's not who I'm proclaiming to be.
Right.
I had a lot of really good, solid arrests and jobs, but mine was a very universal look. I can show you things that are very simple that'll have profound effect. Like, here's how you find people who are really wanted. I tell people, you know, get a guy who's wanted for raping kids on a traffic stop.
Yeah.
And you bring them to justice with a full extradition, or the FBI wants a terrorist. We've had those things happen. That's a real good day at work. Nobody's knocking, you know, finding 10 kilos. I encourage it nonstop, but don't beat yourself up if you're not finding it, because there's other things you can do that have a significant impact as well. And so, but so all of it's important.
And, Absolutely. And that's a caveat on that. You know, we have, I teach for my agency at the local level. I teach a lot of tribal agencies in our area and across the Southwest region. And that's one of the big things that they hit on. Well, hey, you know, Jackson, well, you know, you work, you know, highway interdiction, you know, you work higher level interdiction, you know, what you're teaching, how is this important to us? And one of the things that I hit on is, well, you may work in a smaller area, you may work in a remote area or a rural area in that case, but this stuff will, you know, take place in your areas. Jeremy Bedingfield just posted the other day in your group, you know, like high level interdiction traps, they do roll through your area. And it's 100% true. They have to go from A to B. And when they have to offload that contraband, it has to be offloaded. And typically, like Jeremy was saying, it's in public areas. You know, when we do our investigations here under our federal task force, we typically meet at Walmarts, public areas, and then they offload this contraband and then it goes from one place to another. So people that are working in smaller areas, this stuff is really beneficial. And a lot of people don't really realize that. And a lot of the rookies that I have that I come in that I'll train, I'll refer them to classes like yours, you know, in particular, because, you know, they're working more of an inner community. They're not allowed to come out to hit stuff on the highway with us in majority of the areas that we cover for our agency. And I tell them, there's local crime taking place right in front of you. You know, one of the things I think you even mentioned in one of your classes, you pull up to a stoplight and, you know, everyone's looking straight, no one's talking, somebody's mumbling over, you know, just seeing that simple type of, you know, reaction, whether, you know, body humor or excuse me, body behavior or body reaction, something like that, could cue you on to something bigger. You know, looking at the passengers in the front or the backseat of the car can cue you on to a lot. So you're 100% sure, right.
Yeah. And listen, I want to give people the perspective of like, hey, there's a belief that it's there. You got to understand that the first thing to getting better at being a cop or finding more significant arrests and seizures is believing that it's here, because people just don't believe it's here because nobody hits him. And you could take Kenny Williams. Kenny's got a great story. He had to do through Epic. He had to do a ride along or whatever, one of those organizations. Every year he's got to go out and do a ride along with an agency or some shit like that. Right. So he was going out with a few guys from state agency. Like, yeah, we've been dry for like, I don't know, like 90 days or something like that. Nobody's hit anything, you know, and Kenny went out and hit like his first traffic stop. They hit like almost a pound of heroin. So they're like, oh shit, we haven't hit anything in like 3 months. And he's like, we hit something in the first 2 hours. The question is did they believe it was there? What did they think they were missing? And people ask, oh, I'm going through a cold spell. Yeah, that happens, right? Cold spells happen. But there's a difference between a cold spell and completely being off your fucking game and not understanding and missing everything. Yes. So a cold spell is one thing. And there's a lot of that stuff going on. Like, and you've got to understand, as these organizations begin to or continue to grab the information that we're using against them, they're going to change their tactics and dynamics. Yes. You've got to start thinking about what are the principles of what we're doing out here? How do we employ it? Where does it go? And the game always changes. Although it doesn't change a lot. And I'm not sitting here speaking to high level interdiction. I'm talking about criminals in general will always adapt to what they see law enforcement doing. They're trying to stay a step ahead of you. So you've got to figure out how that game changes. But one thing that I think holds tried and true is people's reactions to your presence. And I've literally built a reputable career on understanding when that's happening. And I try to show people like, hey, first of all, we got to believe that it's here. Secondly, this is what it might look like when it's happening. Thirdly, use what you have as far as educational tools to understand where it's happening. Look at the shows like How to Catch a Smuggler. All these shows that we see where HSI and DEA are doing controlled deliveries, who are they delivering to? Is it three gangbangers from the Crips in the fucking middle of Newark? No. It's a fucking dude who's 53 with three kids in the car and he's got a coach shirt on and he's got a, you know, he's bringing his kids to bowling and he's in a 3-year-old Nissan Pathfinder that's immaculate.
Yeah. You know, I mean, interdiction has really changed my appearance on what I see when I'm out there. Most folks already know, but I hit a load last year, 306 pounds of meth, you know, a whole family. And going back probably 8 years of my career, had I seen this, I probably would have been like, there's no way these individuals are smuggling contraband. Two adults, two kids. The guy, long story short, he hired the lady to bring her two kids along to make it appear to be a family appearance. And through simple, just basic interviewing, you know, through the front seat interview, going through my motions while I'm doing my enforcement action, I was able to uncover that there was some criminal element that was present. Now, what that could have been, it could have been a lot, but I had narrowed it down just through my interview to basically being involved in smuggling contraband of narcotics. And consent search, you know, as a canine handler, consent search went in, boom, right between the two kids, 80 pounds of meth. The rest of the trunk was complete with the rest of the pounds of meth. And I mean, it was just, it was insane, you know, and to see that, you know, now being given my career moving on, I learned to not focus on if I see a family to just, oh, there's nothing going on. If I see something driving behavior wise, I investigate it, find probable cause, try to put that car on the shoulder. You know, a second stop I had, you know, just going back, I had a couple 82, 83 years old, you know, smuggling from Mississippi to California and back, caught them with 4 keys of heroin. I never would have imagined 4 or 5 years ago, somebody doing that at that age. You know, these people were retired. And one of the things that cued me on, just the really small stuff. One, the driving behavior. Two, driving a dually with a fifth wheel hitch and no fifth wheel. You know, I went in, ran the LPR, see that the vehicle's traveling eastbound, westbound, eastbound, westbound. No fifth wheel at any point. And as a retired couple, that just didn't fit right with me. You know, found probable cause. We were able to get it on the shoulder with some other agencies, went through the motor vehicle stop and boom, 4 kilos of heroin. And these folks have been doing this for several years, never have been stopped. It's amazing what you could find out there if you just sit back, watch reactions, close your computer, turn off your radar and focus on the criminal element to people focusing on your drive or people focusing on your vehicle. And I love marked vehicles. I have a highly marked canine unit. And that vehicle sitting perpendicular in the center median, it draws a lot of reactions. And I look for the ones that I'm looking for more detail towards criminal interdiction, narcotics, money high smuggling, level. Weapon yeah, high smuggling, level. High level, 100%.
What was their reaction to you actually stopping them? They've been doing this for years, or 82, 83. What kind of game did they play? Tell us about that.
So for those that have been to my local class, I actually do show that video and you'll see right off the back, the gentleman, he was an 83-year-old male, the female was 82. His reaction, his demeanor, very calm, subtle, sped off responses, no nervousness, you know, but when you ask very specific detailed questions, you would get the, you know, the delayers, you know, the pacifying behaviors that he would show. And that was not consistent with the normal traffic behavior that I had been trained to observe and through my pace of interviewing. And he stood out like a sore thumb to me. Had he been stopped by, you know, a patrol officer with 2-3 years, maybe 4 or 5 years of experience, he probably would have beat him, you know, but learning to ask the right questions, when to ask those right questions, and learning to observe the cues and the behaviors associated with, you know, the deceptive behavior, that's the key. And that's what I really try to focus on in my agency class that I teach for interdiction for the local agencies. And that's kind of what that's my bread and butter to determine if someone's involved in criminal activity. And that's what I love to teach.
What did they say when you started? Like, did you have to drop the dog on that one, or did they give you consent?
So we did run a dog at the same time of the motor vehicle stop. But the gentleman we did get written consent. A lot of people I know, you know, well, if you ran a dog, you have probable cause. You know, why did you not just search the car? Here in the Southwest border, we have a lot of liberal lawyers and judges. And some ways that we have to do things is, especially here in New Mexico, if you get consent for the motor vehicle, it's preferred to get it in written writing. And if you have 5 keys of coke in plain view here in the state of New Mexico, if they deny you consent, you got to get a search warrant, even if it's in plain view, if there's no exigent circumstances. And a lot of agencies and officers, especially on Facebook, you know, they go back and forth with it. And it's like, hey, it's state law here. But me being federal, we have some avenues that we don't obviously have to take that method. So if we get denied consent, then we'll just jump right into a probable cause search. In this case, we stopped this individual along with Arizona DPS assistance on the Arizona side, just outside of Hallbrook, Winslow area. And we got this guy shouldered, ran a dog simultaneously. He ended up giving written consent along with verbal consent, plus the canine. So a beautiful case for a prosecutor, more or less. And in an Amazon box, he retaped it up, some peanuts to not shuffle the packages around when shaken, found 4 kilos of heroin or fentanyl, excuse me.
Hey guys, if you're enjoying the Street Cop Podcast, do us a favor and give us a review on iTunes or Spotify, wherever you're listening to us. Tell a friend. We don't charge anything for the episodes. We appreciate your support. Check us out on any social platform by putting into the search bar Street Cop Training. Give us a follow. We have a lot of free content coming out every single day that you might not catch here on the podcast, and it's important for you to be able to do your job more professionally, and we also entertain you as well.
So when you found out on this 82 and 83-year-old couple, what were they like? Like, I mean, that's a death sentence. They're going to die in jail, right?
You know, I can't go too deep into the aftermath of that investigation. But yeah, you know, the guy was straight up, hey, you know, she didn't have anything to do with this, which in my personal experience and, you know, several hundred investigations involving narcotics and long-term investigations, I kind of obviously did not believe that. But, you know, at the end of the day, he was just straight up, you know, he was just like, yep, you got me, you know, and some criminals do that. You know, I've had some criminals, you know, hey, man, you know, I know something's illegal in the vehicle. It's just a matter of how much do you have? And they'll just look at me and they'll drop their head, you know, and I have a lot. You know, the guy that had the 300 pounds of meth before I even searched the car, I was like, hey, I know something's in the vehicle. And he's like, I got a lot. I was like, how much is a lot? He looks over, I got a lot, you know, and that was his look. And I show that video in one of my trainings, and everyone student wise cracks up laughing when I go in and I pull out 300 plus pounds of meth out of his vehicle.
Dude, how about that gun job you sent me? That one sticks out in my head where it was like inside. Yeah. Tell me about that one.
So we were working westbound, I-40 here just outside of Albuquerque. And we stopped this vehicle. There was a male, female occupant in the vehicle. They were going westbound, got a motor vehicle violation, put them on the shoulder, go through the stop. The males and the female, they were out of Texas. They were going to California. Story just wasn't adding up. Got a consent to search the vehicle. They said that they were moving. In the vehicle, we found suitcases. We found they had just bought some little refrigerators from Walmart you can put in like your bedside in your bedroom, like that you will find in a hotel. We go in, we start searching, we don't find anything. I look over, I was with my boy Julian Armijo when he was a deputy at the time. And we pull out the two refrigerators, and I'm like, hey man, it's right here. He's like, how you know? He's like, it's right here. He's like, we're going to cut it open. I was like, we're cutting them open. We got PC. We're cutting them open. We cut the cardboard off the boxes for the refrigerators, pull it out, had the original styrofoam, all the deal, had the tape on the refrigerator, open those bad boys up. And inside of the refrigerators, they had wrapped several guns inside of the refrigerator, placed them into towels, had some in the freezer sections, have some in the refrigerator section, and they just stuffed them. And I think after we calculated, it was well over 40 Glock Gen 5, which I had no knowledge at the time, but I guess the Glock Gen 5s were illegal in California, or there was some type of law that prevented Gen 5s being introduced to California at the time of the stop. And they had ammunition and guns and magazines. And what they had done, they had gone to several of the gun shows in Texas, purchased all of these guns legally, and we're transporting them to California to sell street side to local users, dealers, thugs, you know, those type of things.
So were they charged with trafficking the guns?
So we ended up, we did charge them at the federal level, mainly because one of the individuals, he did have a felony conviction unlawful user possession, felony possession of firearm.
Damn, that's a tough one, huh?
It is. And it was a pretty long investigation. We didn't initially charge them. We actually released them at the federal level. We do a lot of releasing. There are individuals that we catch with 10, 20, 30 keys. Federal prosecutor wants a little bit more. We seize their phones, bring them back, get an interview, kick them down the road, and then we'll indict them at a later period. And that's a little tough for officers at the state or city level or county level where they don't do that. And at the federal level, everything is long-term, 100% long-term.
That's interesting, you
know,
dude.
What additional can we bring to the table? Federal prosecutors want to know, how many more additional arrests can we make off of this? You know, is this a border nexus? You know, there's a lot of that goes into a federal investigation. Aside from the state or county or city level where they just make their arrest right then and there, do an interview, and then book them into the jail. At the federal level, it's always long-term for us.
How long have I been trying to get you on this fucking podcast?
You've been trying to get me on for a while. It's been a few years because me and you've been friends for quite some time now.
This is exactly what I thought was going to happen. It's fucking amazing to listen to, dude. And I think people listening to this thing are probably finding extreme value and getting real pumped up to want to get into interdiction. So that's a good lead in for me to one of my questions. I was going to ask you at the end, but I'll ask you now because I have other questions to ask you. What's a good piece of advice for somebody who is like, oh, I'm a cop, I'm a year, I'm 3 years on, I'm writing tickets, it's bullshit, I'm not finding, you know, any kind of, accomplishment here. I want to be this guy. I want to be Nick Jackson. I want to hit loads like this. What do I do? What are some steps that I should take to try to get better at my craft?
So first thing I'll hit on, I had to learn really early off in my career. Stop comparing yourself to other people. You know, there are some great interdictors out there. Brad Gilmore, Kenny Williams, Sean Pardaisi. The list goes on. There's some great interdictors out there. The first thing I learned is stop comparing yourself to other people. Stop trying to be like other people and make yourself the best you can be. With that being said, I started my law enforcement career in smaller agencies. And one of the things I learned, I had supervisors that were not pro interdiction. And that's why I started a lot of agency hopping in my initial career. And I was a big ticket writer. You know, I literally love writing tickets. And then I realized I'm spending so much time in court, you know, writing tickets on roadside, I'm missing the opportunity to catch something at a higher level. Then I kind of just back off a little bit and I started making some more felony arrests. I started making more criminal element arrests at my level, but I wanted to get higher. And in order for me to do that, training is huge. Taking as many trainings out there as possible. Don't limit yourself to one level or one company of training. Take every one you possibly can. And that's what I did early on. I had agencies that would not pay for me to go to training. I paid out of pocket. I'd take personal leave. I'd go to these trainings and I come back and I employ what I learned. And that was really huge for me to do that. And if you're working in a department, like I did at one point in my career, I had supervisors that were like, hey, you know, no traffic stops. I want 10 tickets. Cool. I go out, I bang out my 10 tickets, and then I go do what I consider, what you consider, I've heard you in your class, real police work. You know, calls will come out over the radio. It wasn't even my beat. Hey, I'll take the call. I'll take the call. Go take the other officer's call. And then what that did, and what that did is it basically took officers who were kind of against what I was doing. And it was like, hey, okay, look, this guy is pretty proactive, but he's taking other calls that he's not even assigned to. And he's taking reports, taking arrests. And that got them off my back, which got them from complaining to command. And then command kind of left me alone. And it was just, I was just kind of free round to do what I wanted to do, which was criminal interdiction work in between taking calls or shaming calls, as we call it out here. I don't know what you guys call it out there, but that's one of the biggest things you have to do is, you know, take those calls that no one else wants to take. And that would get you a lot of respect amongst your other agencies your other officers within your department.
My friend became a lieutenant. He's, you know, my sergeant when I first started, then he became a lieutenant. And he puts me out. We had an all-car. So we had four districts. All-car was a good gig. All-car meant you didn't get assigned to anything. You didn't get any jobs. And basically it was Dennis Bonino was me, the all-car, because I was the most proactive guy. And by the way, sometimes other people got it. I'm not saying I got it exclusively, but clear as day, I was getting chosen as the all-car. Greg liked the work. He liked me being proactive. He enjoyed it. I think most people, even if you didn't enjoy it, they sometimes enjoyed it because I got people in car chases and we got some crazy shit. And I think even some of the people who didn't want to do a lot of work still had a lot of fun being on my shift because they didn't have to do any paperwork. And I think every cop likes a little chaos here and there. And I fucking stirred it up as much as possible. And I just enjoyed it tremendously. But dude, I remember the first time or one of the first times and Craig actually lives in my town. So I run into him maybe a couple times a year. We don't have like a downtown in my town. It's a little more of a country feel to my town, but I happen to run into him like at fucking the grocery store or something. Mm-hmm. I don't bring any of this stuff up because his old man was actually our first lieutenant. He was the best. He's like a whole different category of stories in that one. He was just this funny old dude who like wasn't funny, but was funny. One of those dudes. But I remember going out to be the all car. And I think people were maybe a little butthurt about it. And then coming in with like all these non-proactive arrests, these reactive arrests and all these jobs. And I didn't forget, him saying to me, he's like, I made you the all car. I'm like, yeah, I understand, but I'm going to do my share before I go and start tearing it up. If it's busy, I'm available. And even if it's not busy and I can handle some of this stuff, I could knock out this arrest in an hour. I could be back on the road in an hour. And then these motherfuckers can't complain. And it's exactly what it was.
It's exactly what it is.
And it worked perfectly. Then I switched sides in a week. So we worked a 4-on-4-off. And, you know, I could see the looks on people's faces when I showed up on the other side of the week. They're like, this motherfucker is here now. Right. Like, you know, like, Christ almighty. What the fuck? First night I'm in a pursuit. And people actually were like, don't forget, dude. You know me. I'm a personable guy. So it's not like I had enemies. They were just like, oh, Jesus Christ. First night, literally my first night, first hour of the shift, I'm in a pursuit with a stolen car. It's not like we work in the hood. Maybe we get a pursuit a week if we're lucky. Right. Maybe you get a pursuit every 2 weeks. So they don't come very often. But when they do, we chase.
Yeah.
So people like, dude, our reputation as an agency was we fucking chased you. So we knew everybody in that police department knew that if we got in a pursuit, everybody's involved. We're all going to get involved and the shit ain't getting called off.
Yeah.
So the first night we're there and dude, like I knew these guys for years, but I didn't switch sides for like 6 or 7 years. So I knew these guys working off duty, working with them. They worked off duty. I was the guy that always showed up. Yo, you need fucking lunch. You need water. Big agency, dude. And I'd float around and I'd tell guys I was field training, make sure you check on these guys. These are our guys. You'll never see their faces, but they're our guys. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just good friends with all these guys. Like it was a real nice camaraderie. And the first night, I think everybody was fucking pumped up. They're like, all right, motherfucker, this is what you're going to bring to this side. I'm like, oh, yeah, we're going to, it's going to be sillier than this. Trust me. And I was actually a field training kid. That was his first night with me field training. He was young. It was a real funny story. But at that time, we didn't have the automobile exception either. And he actually wrote, I think in field training, he wrote 3 search warrants.
Oh, wow. Cars, nice.
Which I was actually happy because I didn't, bro, my whole career, I probably wrote 10 search warrants for cars, maybe 12, because I got consent on everything. Mm-hmm. I was just good at getting consent, making sense to people.
Yep. Verbal judo.
Right. So I'm just, that actually made me a consent ninja. I was like, this sucks. We don't have the automobile exception, but as an instructor now, I can teach people flawless consent, the elements of consent, how to communicate, what it means, how you can say something to somebody and get them to understand legally that you're not going anywhere. It's either consent or we're going for the warrant. We're not afraid to. But I was actually glad during field training that this dude had got to write 3 search warrants because, dude, no shit. 6 months later, my friend Danny, who's a sergeant inside, calls me, goes, what'd you teach this kid during your field training? I go, what do you mean? And I taught him how to do police work. He goes, he just gave a seminar to me and like 5 other sergeants and 2 lieutenants on how to write search warrants. None of us know how to do it. Kid's 6 months on the job and he's teaching the fucking command staff, on mid-level command staff, how to write a search warrant, how it works, what their affidavits should look like, what their qualifications should look like, what they have to do, what the returns require, how you have to document things. And he's like, he just gave us like a 2-hour presentation. We needed help with it. And he sat here as a guy's fucking not even a year on the job.
Yep. And you hit it on the nail, man. They don't teach that at the basic academy. I mean, you've been to FLETC, you know, down in Glencoe, and I've been to FLETC and Artesia. Unfortunately, at the uniform level, they don't teach individuals, you know, officers, uniform patrol, how to write search warrants on vehicles. They just teach probable cause, consent, you know, write a search warrant. That's all
they tell you. They don't even teach that. Let's face facts, Nick. They don't even teach that shit.
It's very limited.
And by dude, that's like the beautiful thing about like the things that we're doing, like guys like you, Sean, and bro, you know, like you know me for a lot of years now. You know how it lines up. I don't have to try to prove myself to anybody. I think my actions speak louder than words. You know that I'm a reliable motherfucker. I'm a true motherfucker to all you motherfuckers. If you don't want to play with us, I don't give a fuck. Don't you want to go do your own thing? That's fine. You want to, you know, those other organizations that they're just dickheads. I'm trying to fuck with them cats. But all of us seem to fucking line up together, get together and stay friends. And we're good to each other. Bauer Brown, all these guys are fucking, you know, and then you got, you know, TJ. TJ doesn't work for Street Cop, but TJ is one of our fucking best pals. Mm-hmm. TJ is like a brother to me. Dude, I love that motherfucker. And I don't know if he'll admit it. I'm going to get him on the podcast when I can. But I'm the one who made him start fucking teaching. He was teaching a little bit and I'm like, brought him into it, dude. I was like, you got to teach this stuff, dude. We got to work together, man. You're the fucking trap guy. Right. I can't teach this shit. They need you. We're doing classes together. We did a lot of cool shit together. T is like one of the fucking best dudes you'll ever fucking meet in your life. You'll meet him. You'll run into him at the conference. If you haven't met, have you met him before, TJ?
Haven't met him before. We've talked offline, work stuff, talked personal, but no, I haven't met him personally.
Yeah, these guys are good, dude. Like, they're just good dudes.
They are.
Ben McQuaid is a good dude. Like, these are these guys, you know, like Nick Pope in North Carolina. Like, these dudes are good fucking dudes. And I think that everybody's a little on the fence about me when I showed up, and now they're like, oh, no, this motherfucker's. This dude's good. This guy's a good dude. I'm not trying to peacock. I'm not trying to pretend. Like, bro, we're trying to pick up the slack. And I, to what you said about nobody learning search warrants, I got three of our instructors right now working on search warrant videos for free for everybody to have. And all it is like, this is a search warrant. This is how you do them. This is how it works. Because when I started teaching house case law, right, which is a fucking powerful class that I got, dude, it's nuts. It became very clear to me that the reason we have such bad case law on home entries is because nobody's how to write a search warrant, right? And then on top of that, your fucking prosecutors don't know how to execute search warrants. They don't know how to do telephonics. They don't even make themselves available for telephonics when you need them. So we know we got to do something. We roll the dice and we get bad case law.
Yep. And you know, that's something that we deal with kind of working in the jurisdiction that I work within. There are certain officers that I know I've worked with or personally on a personal level or tried to assist that have written, you know, tribal level search warrants. And it's, you know, seeing some of the search warrants, a paragraph for a search warrant. It's like, hey, what is this? This is my search warrant. No, let me help you out. Like, this is not a search warrant. Like, if you go in, you find 20 keys of coke, the federal government is not going to adopt your tribal search warrant because your search warrants, it's not up to standard. It's not up to code. So that's some of the things that, you know, we experience working amongst with the Indian country reservations and jurisdictions at the federal level. We try to help our Indian country partners.
How many years are you on the job now total?
This year will be coming up on 14 August. So 14 years law enforcement.
You still love it?
I love it, you know, and I'm in a prime position where I work for a great agency, treats me well, takes care of me. And I was looking at leaving at one point. And then when I sat down, did a hindsight, I was like, this is the agency I'm going to stay with for a while. You know, like I'm happy where I'm at. I'm working criminal interdiction full time, snagging some high level smugglers across the country, working on some high level investigations long term. I'm happy where I'm at. So I'd have to say that.
I mean, you moved around a lot, right? And so did I. In the first 4.5 years of my career, I went to 3 different police academies because I was not settling for what I had at that moment. And obviously you too. The reason I asked you that question is I knew what the answer was going to be. And I want to create a constant dialogue for our listeners who are miserable being cops and who are looking for that reignition of that flame, that why when they started. And look at Nick. Nick's a guy who moved around a lot, moved all over the country, could do many different other things, but focused on getting to where he needed to be to fulfill what he saw and envisioned as his career. So yeah, man, you're going to have to deal with some adversity and some struggles of jumping around from place to place. You've been the new guy quite a few times, right? Mm-hmm. I used to be the new guy, dude. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like I got new, like, bro, I never forget my friend Carlos goes, I was like 9 months on the job and how I met him. We were walking down a hallway to get to the police department. I went, what's up, Poppy? I like your fucking haircut, right? Because that's the kind of guy I am. And he's like, you know, the first time you said that to me, dude, I was like, who the fuck is this guy talking to me like this? But he was only 6 months more on the job at that agency than I was. So I knew he was a newer guy. I wasn't talking to a fucking senior command staff captain there, right? I just knew he was one of my boys. Like, he's going to be one of my boys. So he comes to me. He's like, hey, man. It's like 9 months I was there. And he's like, yo, people like have a real hard time with like, they're like talking about you and like a lot of people don't like you. I go, yeah, but I've been through this before. I go, give it another 9 months. I'm gonna be everybody's fucking godfather. So they're gonna be asking me to be the godfather of the kids. And I promise you'll be talking good about me. I was like, they just have the wrong impression of me because of my personality. I wasn't a shut up and listen. I'm a loud dude. I was class clown, right? I'm a fucking character when you go out and hang out with me. I'm a character in fucking real life. That's just my personality. My parents are the same way. Right. You know, I'm a little abrasive at times. I'm from fucking Jersey, of all places, where if you're not a type A bravado motherfucker, you're going to be a lonely bastard or hooking up with some real ugly girls, right? And that's not what I want in my life. So,
no, 100%.
Yeah, and like, dude, 18 months later, and everybody's like, yeah, I'm like, oh, this guy's the fucking best, bro. We didn't know. Yeah, yep. You were judging me. I get it. I've been through this before. Yeah.
And you're 100% right. You know, and that's one of the things you have to do. You have to go into agencies knowing, especially like us, you know, we did a lot of job hopping. By the second agency, I didn't really care what anyone freaking think. You know, I really didn't. I really didn't care what anyone thought. I go out, I do my job. I let my results and my stats show. In my current agency, it is what it is. Every agency you're going to have, hey, people that hate on you. Oh, you know, he does this. Oh, he does that. Oh, if I had a dog, I could do that too. Anyone who knows me, anyone who's actually been a canine handler and works high level or criminal interdiction at a street level or a higher level. I mean, I can probably think of 5 cases all last year. I was talking with someone the other day. I had about 60 something street level or a highway interdiction level cases last year. Maybe 3 to 5. I pulled my dog out. You don't need a dog. You know, now you really don't need a dog to work interdiction. And a lot of people think you do. And if you can talk to people properly, talk to people with respect, and go through your motor vehicle stop with respect, you gain a lot of respect. I've had some of the most high level smugglers that I've caught. I've had them be interviewed and, hey man, I don't want to talk to you. I want to talk to Nick, you know, because I talk to them with respect. I do a lot of my motor vehicle stops on first name basis. Hey, I'm Nick. What's your name? Cool. Hey, officer. No, don't worry about it. Just call me Nick. You know, just bringing yourself down to the people level where you're not the authority figure. It goes a long way. And just not giving a fuck what people think about you and just going in every day, doing your job, doing your mission, doing it the right way. It'll basically, over time, it'll show people who you actually are.
Nick Jackson, where can they take your training classes now that you're with Sean?
Yeah, so just started teaching with Sean. Just signed on pretty much last month. And I have a couple classes already on the books. Illinois State Police has the first class lined up July 18th, I believe. That's going to be in Mount Vernon. And then shout out to Clarksville Police Department in Indiana. That's going to be on July 20th. We have in the works, we have Arizona, Colorado, and two in Oklahoma in the works now, waiting to get those agencies on the books. You can start looking us up at myletraining.com and check out our training calendar. And if you wanted some hosts, we're hosting at myletraining.com and we can get you signed up.
That's so fucking good, dude. I'm so happy that you're fucking finally sharing this gift with the world.
It's been a while, man. I really wanted to teach a long time and had some family hiccups that I had to take care of, you know, family first, and got that taken care of. And I really wanted to teach with Sean. A lot of companies that you even reached out. I was looking at teaching with you and kind of competing with Brad and Kenny. I was like, I don't know. I love those guys. But, you know, what I really want to hone in on and what I really wanted to focus on was the interview and the smuggling aspect. Because that's what I focus on 90% of my day and my mission. Sean's training and his baseline, basically I took that, cartelled it to how I want to enforce and go out and locate these individuals, different tiers of smuggling, focus on that tier 1, tier 2 level smuggler and taking that to the next level. That's basically where I've taken my level of interdiction from one level to the next.
We have to do this again. And I'm not waiting another fucking 4 months. Just get it on the calendar. Let's fucking do it again. Because I want the world to know that you exist, your training exists, and to get out there. And you know, it took me a long time to convince Kenny to teach. And, you know, Kenny's an unassuming motherfucker. He's like literally like my brother now, dude. Like him and I are very close. And obviously, he's like the best human being I've ever met in my life. I don't think anybody in the world has a bad thing to say about Kenny once they meet him. All right. But, you know, how I convince him, like, bro, you know, you have all this knowledge. Everybody wants to know what you know. It's such a shame that you don't share it. And dude, thank God he does, because what people are able to go out and do and the lives are able to save and change, you know, if I didn't press hard enough and push him to fucking come out and get past his anxieties of teaching, and dude, he does a hell of a job now, you know, so we don't see competition at all. We think that it's wonderful that a guy like you's out in the field. And bro, this, when you understand there's plenty to eat for everybody, and it's just a matter of, is your shit good enough to sit at the level that we're all sitting at. That's all that right. matters. I mean, dude, I'll do yeah. anything I can to help promote all of you guys. I mean, put Bauer on at the fucking conference. I put, you know, Sean on the last conference. Every year, I'm going to try to open up the doors for somebody to come in and promote their shit. You know what I mean? We'll do you next year for the 2024 conference if you want, if you're down with that shit.
Yeah, absolutely, brother.
Yeah, so do you, we'll have you for the 2024 conference because, like, you're a gift to the world, man.
Yeah.
But you're fucking, your game better be strong, motherfucker. I told Bauer Brown, I was like, yo, man, like, you realize that you're, like, on Thursday and you're going after a lot of us. And, like, you know, our keynotes, like, are like, yo, you guys are fucking good. Like, Tim Kennedy, when I came, I went before mm-hmm. Tim, and I came, Tim's the fucking best, dude. Like, and I came off and I'm like, yo, you're up now. And, like, we're going to get you going in about 10 minutes. He's like, fuck, dude, you're really good. I'm like, well, yeah, dude, I do this for a living. He's like, fuck. He's like, dude, my shit sucks compared to yours. I'm like, yeah, but you're Tim Kennedy and I'm just some fucking loser from New Jersey, right? And he's like, no, but dude, that's real. He's like, it was really good, dude. I'm like, well, yeah, this is. And, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, fuck, I got to follow up to this guy. But our instructors, I told Bauer, I'm like, bro, bring your fucking A game, bro. Like, make sure you run that shit past. I want you to soar. I want you to look good. And I want you to just, you know, really line. We really put a lot of thought into the feeling that we give when we display ourselves on a stage. So I say that as a friend and I love you. I'm not saying like, hey, we're like, bro, I want you to fucking have all the success in the world. You know what I mean? Just bring your motherfucking yeah. A game, bro.
No, absolutely. No, absolutely, man. I appreciate it. Look forward to next year. I look forward to this year. I'll be a guest speaker at the DHE Domestic Highway Enforcement up in Reno, Nevada. I was a guest speaker last year. I believe it was last year, March or April last year. So they invited me back to the second year to be a guest speaker there. So no, I'm looking forward to it. And definitely Street Cop 2024, I'll definitely be on my A game.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No doubt, dude. But yeah, I appreciate you doing this today, dude. And we're going to get this scheduled up again. So people are listening. Don't worry, he's coming back. I had like 12 more questions, but what people don't realize in some strange way is Den runs a company too. Not only does Den run a company, you would not fucking believe my days look like, dude. They're insane. You would actually think
I bet.
Dude, I honestly think we really need to film what my days look like here. It has come down to now minutes. I have meetings today I'm going to done in a minute, 12:10 to 12:25. Then I have another meeting from 12:25 to 12:40. Then I have, we actually have to sit down, me and my VP, and do other work for the conference. We have a 2:00 coming in person. That's going 2 to 2:15. Then I've got to come back on and do another podcast at 3:30. Bro, this goes, I start, as soon as my eyes open, dude, you'll see sometimes on Instagram, that's not like scheduled shit. If there are funny memes coming out of, listen, I love it, dude, right? I love this shit. But last night, I'm answering phone calls at fucking 7:10 from like handgun manufacturers who were sponsoring a conference. 7:30, I give my kid the fucking phone, but I had a meeting that I missed and I had to reschedule with the Street Cop Survivors Club, where these guys are going to be raffling off like guns and shit at our conference to raise money for cops who were shot in the line of duty. I missed that one. I'm like, guys, I'm sorry. It's my son's birthday. It really was my son's birthday yesterday. Oh, man. I'm like, oh, I'm fucking my bad, right? And then like, sometimes life happens, right?
Yeah.
So sometimes that shit happens. You know better than anybody.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes shit happens, dude. And, you know, you've got you're a hell of a dad, dude. I watch you all the time. You're obviously on my algorithm because we're friends and we communicate. But I like watching your daughter and how you are with your boys. And I just love it all. I think you and your wife are awesome. And, you know, just
thanks, brother.
Great work, dude. It's a pleasure and honor being your fucking friend. Anything that I say to you, please never take it anything but positivity, because I really mean it. And did you know that?
Likewise, man. I'm always sending, especially my newer guys coming into our agency. We have a really good director of our new agency now, and he's been really good on recruiting. I send all my new agencies like, hey, street cop. Like, you guys need to just help you learn the basics, help you get to the advanced level. Street cop. Street cop's a good group for you guys to get a good foundation. And then obviously I submit them over to our company now, IIII. Help them get them with that interview, because the interview is a big aspect of what we do at any level, any type of interdiction or law enforcement you're doing, 911 calls, domestics, you got to have the interview. And without the interview, I mean, we miss out on a lot from a law enforcement entity aspect.
It's awesome, bro. Well, I got to run. That's it.
All right,
good
brother.
See you, dude. I'll be in touch.
Likewise. Peace. All right, man. Be safe.
Guys, if you're in an area where you're trying to get to our classes, but we're not close to you,
Fret not. We actually have on-demand training at StreetCop.com. You can take that course online right now, and then you could attend that training in the future at no additional cost. You can redeem your voucher, so you get two for the price of one. We don't want to deny you the ability to take this training now, especially knowing that it can keep you safe, at a very minimum, putting bad guys in jail where they belong, and at the maximum, going home to your family. Check out StreetCop.com for that offer.